Welcome to the Medical Advantage Podcast, where you can hear healthcare professionals, expert consultants, and industry thought leaders discuss the exciting new ideas and technologies that are changing the business of healthcare. Tune in to each episode as we hear from some of the most innovative minds in medicine about the future of healthcare and how your organization can stay profitable, efficient, and on top of industry best practices.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Medical Advantage podcast series. On this week's episode, we've put together an audio version of Medical Advantage's recent webinar on increasing the value of your medical practice. In this webinar, our very own Pete McCann sat down with Cantor Fitzgerald's managing director, Richard Bland, to discuss how private equity groups interact with the healthcare space, what it means for practices, the movement from fee-based to value-based payment systems, and so much more. This conversation was part of a larger webinar series. So to watch this and previous episodes, visit our website at medicaladvantage.com or just sit back, relax, and enjoy the audio version of this webinar. Thanks for listening.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our broadcast. I'm Bill Riley from Medical Advantage. And on behalf of all of us here, we'd like to welcome you and thank you for joining us today. Our discussion is regarding increasing the value of your practice. So whether you're considering selling your practice in the next few years or you desire to grow, increase the value for your practice for perhaps a future sale, you know, 10 years down the line, this is the session for you. On the next slide, let me just briefly touch on our panelists for today. We'll do a more formal introduction in just a minute, but for now, I'm pleased to introduce Mr. Richard Bland, managing director from the financial services firm Cantor Fitzgerald, and our own Mr. Pete McCann. Many of you have seen Pete in prior broadcasts that we've done. Pete is our vice president responsible for all private equity related pursuits. My name is Bill Riley again. I'm a member of the Medical Advantage marketing team. Let me quickly do an introduction or an overview of Medical Advantage for those of you who may be new. We are a part of the Doctor's Company. Riley, if you can go to the next slide real quick. So the Doctor's Company is the largest physician-owned medical malpractice insurer in the country, consisting of different business units. Medical Advantage is the subsidiary, the only subsidiary not in the PL space, but rather we provide consulting services at the point of care. Speaking of those services, Riley, if you can go to the next slide, we really lump them into two big buckets around practice improvement, practice transformation, as well as technology services focused narrowly on the EHR, essentially doing whatever it takes to help practices and physician groups succeed, whether that's from quality metrics, cost improvements to drive better value-based care performance, to in-practice technology service centered around the proper use of the EHR. We provide both in-person as well as virtual assistance to help our clients. Many times we're contracting directly with the practice or with the physician group. Other times, especially in the last year to 18 months, we see more and more private equity engagements where at the end of the day, we're providing the same services at the point of care, but now we're doing it on behalf of the PE firm for you know, practices within their portfolio. And that kind of leads us into our discussion for today. With that, Riley, why don't we take down the slides for a minute? And Pete, I'll go to you. Why don't we start, if you could just give us, introduce yourself and share a bit of your background, and then we'll do the same for Rich.
Good. Thanks, Bill. And welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining the webinar today. So my name is Pete McCann. I've got about 30 years in the healthcare physician space in multiple roles with groups. And over the course of the last 30 years, we've seen the transformation of physician offices of all subspecialties from family practice, internal medicine, orthopedic, urology, and even in the dental marketplace and ophthalmology of a consolidation. It started about 25 years ago when family physicians and doctors were being sold to hospital systems. And that really kept going for for about a dozen years until health systems really ran into some financial problems. But that really started up again in the early 2000s, where health systems became more advanced and were back to buying physician offices. So where you had a lot of private practice physicians selling their practice and becoming part of either larger health system groups or just larger groups in general, you had really a consolidation in the industry. Over the last 10 years, that really has ramped up and changed course a little bit, because we've got a lot of private equity firms involved with creating large physician groups that are out there in the marketplace of most specialties. And through the last year, through COVID, that's accelerated too. So what we're going to talk about today with myself and Rich from Cantor Fitzgerald is what we're seeing in the marketplace for you as a physician out there, what that means to you, what it could mean. Who's calling you on the phone saying, would you like to sell your practice? Is that a hospital system? What is a private equity group? How that all relates to where you are currently and where you want to go tomorrow and in the next few years. I think it behooves everyone to at least understand what the marketplace is doing and what that could mean for your practice today and moving forward. So Medical Advantage is a group that does consulting for all of the different types of services in physician offices on the clinical side and technology side. And this is another avenue of education that we're offering to physicians, because it's real. The consolidation's real. The plans are real. And it doesn't seem to have an end in sight. So we're here today to at least answer questions and educate everyone out there as to what this may mean for you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Pete. And Rich, can you do the same? Tell us a little bit about your role at Cantor Fitzgerald.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me today. Excited to talk about what's really a fascinating time in the physician world with all the changes that are going on from a regulatory environment and from a consolidation perspective. By way of background, I'm a managing director with Cantor Fitzgerald. Cantor Fitzgerald is one of the largest privately owned investment banks on Wall Street. We're about 11,000 employees. And I sit within the investment bank focused on doing mergers acquisitions advisory, helping our clients raise capital, whether it's through the debt or equity markets, and a whole host of other investment banking and strategic advisory services that we provide. I lead our efforts in the multi-site, more retail-oriented physician practice management space. So my clients include groups across the dental, derm, vet, vision space, which have been part of a longer consolidation experience over the last 20 to 25 years. And then my clients now, extend into some newer areas that are seeing a lot of investment dollars entering, and that's orthopedics, gastro, urology, even areas like allergy ENT and podiatry and cardiology and a number of other single specialties as well. I have 20 years of investment banking experience. I've been specifically dedicated and focused in the healthcare services space, focused on physician practice management for the last almost 10 years. And prior to that, worked across Wall Street at a number of different global investment banks, working across a number of different sectors and industries as well.
Okay, fantastic. Why don't we just get into it and let's just start talking about the current market, the current scenario. Rich, why don't we start with you? I can just see from some of the folks we have dialed in and where they come from. We've got a number of people representing physician practices or providers in general. Can you start just with sort of a layman's perspective around private equity and what is private equity all about? What is their role? Why are they interested? What's happening with private equity?
Sure. So, private equity and private equity groups, many of you, I'm sure, have been contacted by some of them, are basically investment professionals that have a variety of different expertise in making investments in private companies. So they'll very much like the public markets invest in the stock of a public company. private equity is by nature investing in private businesses. You know, why are they interested in healthcare services and why are they interested in physician businesses in particular? Well, you know, healthcare obviously makes up a significant part of our overall economy. It's continuing to grow and expand, which is obviously attractive when you're an investor and would like to invest those dollars in businesses and in industries that are growing. Their dollars come from large pension funds and endowments and other institutions that, you know, give, you know, make investments with private equity firms that have dedicated pools of capital. And it's the private equity investors that then need to make very prudent investments in a handful or two handfuls of companies that they think can, you know, benefit from partnering with them and benefit from, you know, what they can bring to the table as investment partners to help them grow and expand and deliver returns to the private equity investors. From a healthcare services perspective and from a physician practice management perspective, it's been a very, very active space for a long time. You know, one of the main thesis that private equity investors have is they love targeting sectors that are highly fragmented, especially ones that are going through, you know, what I would call some type of evolution. And obviously, you know, as many of you live and breathe it every day, the healthcare world is probably one of the most progressive in terms of change that has to be constantly top of mind for people. And with that comes the need to invest in things like technology and systems and personnel and other things. And that's what's attracted private equity. It's attracted private equity because they saw very early on, as early as the 1990s, an opportunity to come in and build business support organizations that effectively provide the support and resources and services that can help their physician partners and practices better manage their patients, better deliver care, better, deliver better compliance and also, do a better job with the payer community. And so they've been very, you know, very attractive for private equity for a number of reasons, and a big one of them is consolidation. And in highly fragmented markets where there's an opportunity to consolidate what people typically call the mom and pops of the world and help them to professionalize their businesses, they give them the tools and capital to help them grow, expand, make the investments where they need to, and be successful, not just from a clinical perspective, but from a business perspective as well. So we've seen this now 25, 30 year history of private equity firms investing in physician businesses. And over time, and we can get into a little bit of this later on, over time, the model has evolved. It's evolved with the changing desires of what physicians want today and what they need. And I think we're at a very interesting inflection point in the marketplace today where there's a lot of different opportunities out there. It's not just trying to fit a square peg in a round hole anymore. But now, as a physician, you have a myriad of alternatives, and one of them is status quo. But now you can do a whole host of other things, versus status quo or sell to a hospital. There's a lot of options that fall in between those, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Pete, what's your take if you look from your vantage point?
And I think, you know, I grew up in a world where I was around physicians, you know, most of my life, through the different businesses and family businesses that we had. And part of what Rich says, it really is the core of why are we in, what are we doing here? Why are bankers, why are Cantor Fitzgerald, why are these Wall Street firms and private equities interested in healthcare? And a lot of it comes down to investment. You know, most physicians out there, and I'm sure the sentiment is true, get into medicine for the altruistic way of helping people, being able to patient care and provide help and support for people in a multitude of scenarios. And that's great. And that's what we want to support, what gets supported. But there is a point where investment is needed in these groups. And to Rich's point, when you've got 30 or 40 smaller groups or smaller physicians spread across, they may not have the ability to invest the way that needs to be invested in for where the market's changing, you know, technology driven, you know, imaging components, everything that's out there to provide the best quality of care. So what the private equity's done, and prior to this, what the hospital systems did, is they want to invest in offices to provide better quality of care to their patients. And I think that gets lost sometimes because it's like, well, they're going to buy me. We're not going to buy you. It's really they're going to invest in you and your group or a larger group to become better at what you do. And I think that's really the missing component that when I talk to a lot of physicians who don't understand, well, why should I sell or why should I invest? Why are they doing this? And really it is to become better. You know, there is a profit component to it all. There, you know, healthcare is a big industry and there's revenue to be made there. But the better the healthcare, the better investment, the better patient care there is. So it really helps everyone along the chain. It helps the investor from a return on investment, but it really helps patients. And that's what I've seen in terms of what investors can bring to local physicians or groups or specialties like orthopedics or dermatology and urology that maybe they were lacking prior to this. And I think that's why we're seeing such a big push into the marketplace.
Very good. I'll ask both of you, in the last 12 to 18 months, are there certain trends or are there certain specialties or subspecialties where you're seeing more activity? Anything you can mention there?
Yeah, I'll start. And I know Rich and I've had this conversation just even recently. There was always a push for some of the subspecialties that were out there. You know, GI was big recently. Orthopedics was big. Dental's been big for a while. You know, urology. You know, those are some of the bigger subspecialties. Ophthalmology. What COVID did back, you know, almost a year ago was reset some of that, which increased some of activity, but also it added a new player to the space that we were talking about recently was behavioral mental health services. You know, that has been traditionally one of the more fragmented groups that are out there. You've got a lot of local providers and local groups that either work in school systems or outpatient and inpatient in conjunction with, you know, alcohol and drug addiction services. We're seeing, or at least I'm seeing, a real consolidation of that. Again, the investment there to become more efficient, to be able to outreach to more patients, to provide better and more efficient care that is needed because of COVID and, you know, the spike in mental health services. So that's some of the what I've seen recently. And all the other subspecialties continue to, along that path.
Yeah, I would echo what Pete said there and just add on to it a little bit of, you know, why is this all happening? Because it felt like, you know, things were pretty consistent for 50 years in the medical profession. Well, we as a global population understand the value of holistic care and comprehensive care. And we're now moving into an environment where the larger the institution, the more capabilities that they have, the better resources they have, the better outcomes they can deliver. And when the patients can get better outcomes, then, you know, then we're serving them in the best capacity we can as a field. And part of the consolidation that's happening is driven by this migration from, well, you know, every visit or every procedure gets a fee. We're moving from that old, you know, model to a newer model that says, let's start testing the outcome and evaluating the outcome of the services that we're providing. And we're starting to pay our physicians according to how well they perform on those metrics. It's a slow move. It hasn't hit all specialties yet. It's going to be probably a conversation we're going to continue to have over the next 10 years, but it's definitely the direction that we're headed across the entirety of the healthcare space.
Okay, terrific. Why don't we start looking ahead here? So let's say I'm a physician. I'm nearing retirement age. I'm exhausted. My staff, you know, everything we've been through with the pandemic. So, you know, maybe I'm considering selling my practice. Perhaps I've been contacted by members of the investment community. What advice or tips would both of you offer to such a practice in terms of, you know, getting ready to sell?
Yeah, I mean, from my end, I always say, you know, be aware of what other practices are doing around you, what the health systems are doing around you, what a lot of the other groups that are involved in healthcare now, as many people out know, are the insurance companies. You know, United Healthcare is one of the largest companies in America by revenue, but it's also the largest insurance company and also one of the largest providers of healthcare from the provider level. So my thing is, talk to the local physicians around you who have either been through the process, looking at the process, look at your current patient base, where they're coming from referrals, where, you know, what you see in terms of the aging of your population, and then partner with groups that can help you give you some of the data that's out there. What does your population look like? What does the population in your geography look like? Can you expand outside that? Have you made investments in your EHR? You know, 15 or 20 years ago, I was out in the street selling EHR to private practice physicians. And there was a big hurdle because they were very satisfied with the paper charts and there wasn't a link back to the health systems. And it was a difficult sell. Now, as we all know, we all have EHRs in our system. Look at the technology that they're most recently, you know, have you made the investment in telehealth? You know, that's here, you know, that's been a push for many years, but COVID has made that here to stay. So look at all the components that you have and see what your potential is to continually treat patients effectively and provide good patient care and also manage a business. And if you're at that point where you've invested 30 years of your life and built this wonderful practice up, it's time to maybe reap some financial rewards. But beyond that, it's not sell and you retire tomorrow. Most of the groups that are out there want you on for X amount of years to help them invest, grow that practice, and turn it over to the next generation. So really, I look at part of it as succession planning. You know, where is your practice going to go? Not just, I want to sell, retire, and take the money. That's not what most investment groups are looking for. They're looking for you as the quality provider and to help them. You know, you're the biggest resource they're investing in. So that would be some of my advice, is to kind of ask the questions, take a look at your office. And there are plenty of groups out there that can help kind of maneuver through the process.
Rich, your perspective?
Yeah, no, Pete hit the nail on the head. It's never too early to start getting prepared. And the first things you do is understand what's going on around you. I've talked to a myriad of physician groups over time, and you know, a lot of them felt like, because of their specialty, whether they're a radiology group in San Antonio, for instance, and they're the largest group in San Antonio, for instance, they felt like their market was protected and that they'll never have any competition. They've been around for 70 years. This is fictitious. And as an example, by the way, it's not a specific group, but the world has changed. It's changed materially because consolidation is happening everywhere. There are groups of size and scale being formed every day, and they are growing and they're expanding. And they don't care if you're in San Antonio or Dallas or Miami or Montana. It's nationwide. And so for doctors who are part of a practice, whether they're owners or their associates, whether they're young or they're old, they should understand what's going on in the marketplace today and prepare themselves for the future. And that could be, you know, a number of different things. But, you know, I think talk to people, not just friends and colleagues who are doctors, but talk to other people, talk to administrators, talk to advisors, talk to investment banks. You know, understand what people are seeing from different perspectives, because I'm sure you'll hear slightly different and in some instances very different stories, you know, from the different people who are involved and what their experience has been and what their perceptions are.
Right. And also to add to that, you know, when I talk about the way healthcare has changed, it really has grown outside the four walls of the building that the people are in. You know, a lot of what has been created over the last 20 years are these independent or affiliated groups, the managed service organizations, the MSOs, which can do a lot of the background operational functionality of an office to free offices up to do what they were intended to do, is provide patient care. So look at your practice and say, are you spending operationally time more than you are spending with patient time? Would it benefit me to look at a back-end group that can handle my payer contracts, handle my accounts receivable collections, do all of the, you know, that operational functionality that could free up my time to expand my horizons? MSOs are real. They've been around for many years. I've worked, and I'm sure Rich has worked in helping either build or create them. And they bring real value to healthcare. And it was a big missing component for groups 30 years ago that were kind of spread out all over the place. So those are some of the items that I take a look at is, can you manage your office more efficiently if you weren't doing the operational details of it? And that's usually a sign of where you may want to go with it. Because if that's where you're spending your time, you know, we want to make sure that, or the groups want to make sure that you're spending your time with patients.
Very good. And, you know, I think this kind of flows naturally into the next topic, which is maybe there's that other subset or set of our audience that is not looking to sell short term, but would like to grow their practice for perhaps, you know, 10 years or beyond a possible sale. Sounds like some of the same things you guys just mentioned could apply, you know, engaging with other colleagues and considering an MSO. Some of these other things would be good advice for practices in that category as well.
Absolutely. You know, the part of what we talked about in the beginning is it's the investment. You know, how can you make an investment to become a better practice, see more patients, and become, in effect, a larger group? You know, I worked with a doctor who's, you know, 45 years old, nice practice, and really doesn't want to sell, wants to expand. But a lot of what they go through is the same kind of process too. You know, how do you want to expand? What resources do you have? Well, sure, you can go get a commercial loan and from a bank, and then what do you do with the money? There are groups out there, including the private equity sector, that will say, we've got a plan to help you grow. We're going to take your practice, and then you're going to be the center point for a practice that's 40 physicians. We're going to build an MSO for you. We're going to invest in technology for you. So it's not just, I want to sell the practice. It's, you know, where's my investment partner? So there's two sides of the house to look at it. You know, a lot of times we think about what I said before is, I want to sell, I want to retire, and I, you know, and go spend my time on a beach somewhere. This is, you know, the biggest part about it is, the private equities and most groups want to invest in you. So whether you're 40 years old and have a nice practice today, how do you grow that? How do you become a more efficient practice? And investment dollars is usually where is the center of it. So
very good. Very good. So I'll remind everyone again, if you have questions, please use the chat bubble on your GoToWebinar tool. We have had a couple come in, so why don't we hit those quickly here. One is around, like, where do I start? My office has received a couple calls from different firms. How should I proceed? Kind of paraphrasing, like, what do I do next? What's my next step?
Yeah, I'll start that one, Pete, and maybe you chime in as well. Look, you know, invariably, almost every practice is going to get called by either a health system, hospital, United Healthcare through Optum, private equity consolidator, or even large, you know, partner-owned groups that are actively growing and expanding. You know, so, you know, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, Bill, in that, you know, the partnership practice should always be prepared. They should always understand what's going on around them and have a set of goals for the practice and understand what each individual person and partner within that practice, what their goals are. And over time, you can leverage that in a way to move quickly if you do get inbounded by a private equity firm or an investment banking advisor. But, you know, my advice is, it's never harmful to have a conversation and just hear what people are talking about, just to get an education on what's going on in the marketplace. Why is this person calling us? Why are we of interest? Hearing them out and hearing about what they bring to the table and perhaps what would make a compelling argument for why there should be more than just an introductory conversation. And that really launches then into, you know, a broader discussion amongst the partnership group of where are we today and where do we want to be in the future? Where do we want to be in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years? And obviously you have people at different stages in their careers that have different goals and objectives. But when you put the partnership first and understand where you want to be, then you need to figure out how you get there. And in many instances, it's these inbound calls from private equity firms that could help to, you know, facilitate that thought process in getting started.
Very good.
I would agree with that. And part of the landscape that's out there currently, because there's so much consolidation that's going on, the investment groups do a lot of marketing around what their story is, what they've done, what their investments are, who their practices are. So if you look at some of the top private equity groups that are out there, you could go into their investments and have their story told. You know, there's a large national gastro group that's out there. They tell a great story about how they started, who they acquired, what they did after they acquired, and how they've expanded, how they built their MSO. You know, I just worked on an orthopedics group. It's the same kind of a process. We started here, we built an MSO around it, and then we expanded. Read those stories. They're all available on those websites and online to get an idea of why did they do this? Why did that doctor do that? And a lot of times they'll, you know, you can request to talk to one of the founding physicians of those groups. The investment groups that are calling you want to educate you. That's the first part of it. They want to make sure that if you're interested, but use that education to your advantage. Talk to as many people as you can, you know, in conjunction with, you know, some of the basics are, like I said, look at the technology in your office, look at your equipment, look at your financials. Do you have, you know, do you have an understanding of what your practice does? You know, look at your payer mix, where your referrals are coming from. Have all of that in your head. So as you start to talk to these groups, and again, I would ask to talk to a lot of the founder physicians that are part of these groups. They could tell you a great story about what they did, and you can relate to them more efficiently than you can even relate to Rich and I.
Very good. Thank you.
Just one point I want to add on. Pete brought up a good concept, and one I want to make sure that the audience here has an appreciation for. You know, these consolidators in the marketplace today are doing more than consolidating. And as part of your education, that should be questions that you have as doctors when you're learning about some of these platform groups out there is, what have you done to create value for the organization? Because it takes one skill set to go out and find, you know, groups to go out and acquire and then integrate. What value are you bringing as a larger group, right? Are you getting better payer contracts? Do you have better systems and technology? Do you have better recruiting and retention? You know, there's a myriad of things that people can point to, and that's where your education should really focus on learning about why you as a doctor in a group that's, you know, obviously running well and it's a good business should consider partnering with one of these other groups. And what successes can they point to that can demonstrate a reason why you should consider them to be a potential partner?
Right. And the one last point I'll add to that is just examine what the risks are to your current business. You know, again, a year ago, none of us would have imagined COVID-19 would probably be one of the biggest risks to healthcare. You know, it's a disease, thinking that would spur it. But there are a lot of specialties, you know, orthopedics and the dental specialties, the ophthalmology specialties that were almost revenue or patientless for 60, 90, 120 days as the lockdowns occurred. That was a big risk. If you were a physician who was at the tail end and looking to maybe retire, maybe some of your savings had to get into just kind of keeping the office afloat during those times. So part of it is, what's my risk if I do this today or tomorrow from the investment standpoint? Can I survive, God forbid, the next COVID or something similar to that in terms of a practice? Can I survive on the references I'm getting, the referrals I'm getting now? Can I survive against a health system that just opened up their centers right across the street? So look at the risks as well as where your practice is today. And, you know, you'll quickly surmise to say, hey, maybe a conversation with one of these is the best interest for my group.
Okay, very good. We've had a couple other questions come in, but just to keep to our time, I want to keep us moving along here. I promise those of you that have submitted questions, we will follow up after the session here with some answers. So Riley, if you can go to the next slide, I want to give a little information about Rich and his contact information, where you can learn more about Cantor Fitzgerald and as well as Rich's contact information. Similarly, on the next slide, Riley, for Medical Advantage, there's Pete's information. We do sessions like this all the time. Almost every single week, we're doing a session such as this. So please like us, follow us in social media. That's where we do a lot of the alerts and the announcements of upcoming sessions. I'm proud to announce we've just recently launched the Medical Advantage podcast. And our very own Pete McCann is featured in a number of the early issues. So please check us out there wherever you get your podcasts. Riley, on the next slide, I want to quickly mention the insights and resources section of our website. We're doing updated blog content every single week. All of the sessions we've done, webinars in the past, recordings are available on a wide range of topics for you to listen to, view at your leisure. Okay, so with that one final point before we sign off here, as soon as we're done, you will see a survey that comes up on your screen. It's just a couple of quick questions. If you would please give us your feedback, we would greatly appreciate it. And with that, gentlemen, Pete, Rich, great job. Thank you very much. And for our audience, thank you for joining us today. And we hope to see you again in a future session. Please enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks for listening into some of our key points from our webinar discussing how to increase the value of your medical practice. To view the full webinar, additional entries in the series, and other resources regarding Medical Advantage's in-practice technology service offerings, please visit our website at medicaladvantage.com. See you next time.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Medical Advantage podcast, where we discuss the ideas and technologies changing healthcare and what they mean to your organization. For more information, visit us at medicaladvantage.com and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a show.